Came that from the harvester, a daughter of theirs. No, not from the crane, from the plumbing. They were in the plumbing, millionaires, the cranes. In the plumbing, they were in the big plumbing. They had blocks of factories, and they were, I think, on Kedzie Avenue, somewhere south. And a daughter of theirs was interested. You know, they used to discuss in the whole house that this one needed the help to go with them, and this one needed the help. So this year, daughter, I think she was Mrs. Lilly, if I'm not mistaken, said that she'll go on the picket line. She wants to know. She couldn't believe it. That they, the minute I come on the picket line, they take me away. Maybe she's fresh. Maybe she's doing something to the police that they keep on taking her away. So they wanted to see, to convince themselves that the picket people don't do any harm to anybody. So she called me up one day. I just finished this with a few words. She called me up from the Hall House. They called me up from the Hall House to tell me that somebody's coming on the picket line to help me today, and how she looks. She's dressed in a men's, a tailor-made suit and a tailor-made hat, a plain hat, like a man's hat. When I see that woman, I should walk up to her. So I went on the picket line, and I saw her coming. And I walked up to her, and I heard the same time when I walked to her, I passed by the police, and I heard the police say, "Now, John, be careful. There's somebody here that we don't know, and she's walking straight to them. Be very careful, be very careful." And I walked right to her, and I said to her, "Are you Mrs. So-and-so?" No, she said to me, "Are you Lottie?" I said, "Yeah." And she took me under my arm, and we walked. We walked twice up to the corner, and the police came over.
Did you have your picket sign in your hand?
I don't know whether we had the picket signs at that time. I don't remember. I don't remember. And as I walked with her, two police came to me, and each one took me under the arm. And she said, "Now, officer, that girl didn't do anything to you. Why are you taking her away?" They didn't answer her. And she said, "If she's going, I'm going too." And the officer said, "No, lady, you can't go. We want her." And she pushed herself in the wagon. But coming out of the wagon, they didn't take her in, but they took me in.
The police station?
In the police station. They didn't take her in. They took me in. And with Irene, I was arrested many, many times together with Irene. Many times.
Lottie, this, you know, you were saying that these were like, you know, real high society type people that were at Hull House.
We had a lot of society.
Weren't they worried about getting arrested?
Well, I don't
wasn't,
know.
You know what?
A lot of society people participated. We had a professor from the Chicago University, a daughter of his and a wife, and he was in the, I think he was a Russian literature he was teaching. I don't remember, but it was in the Northwestern or in the Chicago University. I think the girl was going to the Chicago University, and the father was a Northwestern professor, I think. They participated with us. They walked with us day and night. They walked with us all over. And in a lot of women, society people walked. Although, say back, they were responsible maybe for ours. Picketing, because who were the manufacturers if not the rich people? They were rich people. They were they had the money, but they walked with us. They walked with us.
Do you think they got involved on their own, or someone educated them about?
Well, they participated in the whole house. They helped the whole house. You know, the rich people gave donations to Hull House, an awful lot of people, money. Otherwise, they couldn't go on, but they worked what they did to Hull House. You know that. The Hull House did an awful lot of, took in a lot of immigrants that came in, especially there where they were situated. They had a lot of Italian people over there. Everybody that came in, they were poor. The Hull House was their home. And nursing home, nurseries they had for children. When the mothers went to work, the fathers went to work, they had the children there. They went to school there. They got food over there. I myself used to get food over there, coffee there. I used to come in there. When I worked at Scotch Water Mills, I used to get the coffee or sandwich sometimes and go further, walk. Sometimes I used to walk from my aunt lived on Sawyer and 13th Street. Sawyer and 13th Street was 3200 West, near Roosevelt Road. And I was on 800 West, and 800 West, and 500 or 600 South. And sometimes I would walk home to save that nickel, because I would stop up in the Hull House, I would get a sandwich and have a cup of coffee. So I had strength to walk home. And sometimes I had to work till 11 o'clock, to 10 o'clock, I had to work in Scotch Water Mills. They used to make you to work till 10 o'clock, to 9 o'clock. Our time was up 6 o'clock. But when they had work, they wanted you to work. They said that they're going to pay you. Sometimes they paid, sometimes they didn't. And we worked till 10 o'clock, to 9 o'clock, to 10 o'clock. And walked down from the 10th floor. There was no elevator running anymore. So we used to walk down from the 10th floor.
Lottie, do you see any differences in how you felt from that first time you heard the whistle blow and you walked out the door to going through the pickets and seeing you know, the community action that and the people from the community getting involved in the strike? Did you get more excited?
Yes, I did get excited. The first day we had four or five people come down. Those that acted like that, Anna and Louie and another Polish woman and I, and I thought myself, oh, there was not enough people that went down. The next day, another 10 people came down.
They came out in groups?
Yes.
They didn't all walk out at once?
No, they didn't. Within 2-3 days, they all came out.
Why do you think... Why didn't they offer?
We accept a few of them. I don't know. I suppose they wanted to work. They wanted to. I don't know why. What was their idea? I don't know. But maybe they were ashamed. Maybe the parents. Maybe they read the paper that they saw people are striking, and they were afraid after the strike would be settled, they wouldn't be able to work. Which after a strike, usually steps were not taken back. You know. But we lost the strike at that time, and I told you before I was step two. I have to show you. I lost the pocket.
Could you explain what happened? Was this at the beginning of the strike?
Yeah, this was in the, well, we were in the strike already a couple of weeks. And I said to him, I walked up to him and I said...
Who was it?
A man, a young man. And I said to him, why are you working? Do you know that we are here out of work for so many weeks? I think we were on strike for 12 weeks, I think.
Was he in the shop?
Yeah, he was in the shop.
In your shop?
Yeah.
You walked up into the shop?
No. He was went out for lunch. He went out for lunch. And he had his hands in pocket. It was winter. I think it was October or December. I don't know. It was cold. And I had a heavy coat too. I had my hands in the pocket. He had his hands in the pocket. I had a pocketbook hanging over here. And I walked up to him like this here, and I said, "Why didn't you come down with us? You know, we are all striking, for better conditions. And all of a sudden, I don't know, I took out my hand from the pocket. And I suppose I wanted a gesture or something, says, with my hands or so. So he thought, that's the way I understood. He must have thought that I was going to do something to him. So he grabbed the and I was like this here, and he went like this here. And I started screaming. Police were around there. I started screaming and running. I got myself like this here, and I was running. And you know that I ran all the way home. Not home. I lost my pocketbook at that time too, and I ran to, they had a Cutter's office on Canal. There was an office from the Cutter's there, and you know, when he struck the knife like this here, I went with my hand like this here, and I dropped my purse. So I had no money to go home. So I ran to from Franklin and Madison. I ran, that wasn't very far, just a few blocks, to the office of the boys there. I knew the boys always used to get it together in that office. And I asked them to give me 5 cents carfare. And my glasses, I broke some other time, my glasses that time. I have glasses on too. Geyer said to me, gave me a quarter. And I said, I don't want a quarter. Give me a nickel, give me. I fought with him. I didn't want to take a quarter. Just a nickel for carpet. And I don't remember what they gave me. And I ran to my aunt's doctor. We lived on Lawndale in near Roosevelt Road, and the doctor was just across the street upstairs. And at that time they only paid 50 cents to see a doctor at that time. And this doctor was a very outspoken doctor. He used to talk to you and yell at you and so on. Well, when I came in, and I came in like this here, holding, and he said, oh, what the hell happened to you now? Like that. So I said to him, please, I said, don't tell my aunt, because I don't know what happened to me over here, but I'm bleeding. Don't tell my aunt, because if you're going to tell, I told him that I'm on a strike, and I have no money to pay, and don't tell my aunt, because if you're going to tell my aunt won't let me go back tomorrow morning, and I have to be back tomorrow morning on the line. Ticket line.
Didn't you think that she'd see it?
She never knew it. No. She never knew it. As I told others, but she never knew about it. So he was yelling, he was running around and sterilizing his things and fixing up and cleaning up. First he was cleaning all my clothes, was full of blood and everything. And he was cleaning and stitching and doing whatever. How big is it about that? Oh, is that big?
Yeah.
He said it was 5 stitches. I didn't believe it. It had 5 stitches in it. And I said to him, doctor, I said, when I'll start working, I'll pay you. He said, okay, go home, and be a good girl. Don't be running around anymore. He yelled at me. And I came in, the door was open, and my bedroom was right near the door. And we had the steps going like this here yet in the bedroom. Did you ever see a room with steps at the ceiling? The ceiling is like this, like this here, ceiling. Uh-huh. Like this. And we slept, 3 girls slept in one bed. My aunt's 2 daughters. I slept in on one side, and the 2 other sisters slept on the other side. And I lay down over there, and I heard my aunt go around. And Lottie's not here yet. What's the matter with Lottie? She's not here yet. She always comes in around 6 o'clock. She's always here. 7 o'clock, she's always here. Now she's not here yet. And I was afraid to answer. I should have told her that I was home when I got in. But later, when I was undressed and I was in bed already, I was afraid to say anything until I heard my aunt go in and out and go in and out and looking for me. And my cousin went into the bedroom. She said, "Here she is. She's sleeping here. She's sleeping." So my aunt ran in and said, "What's the matter with you? What are you, you didn't even come in to say hello. You didn't need anything, nothing." I said I was awfully tired, so I lay down to sleep. I didn't want to tell her anything. And she never knew. The next morning I got up, because she would have never let me out of the house the next morning. And to me, this was picketing the shop was more than anything else. If I wouldn't come, I was the leader of theirs. If I wouldn't have come, they wouldn't have go picketing either.
What about when you left, when you got stabbed? Were you afraid that something would happen while you were gone?
Well, there was somebody. They didn't know I ran away. They didn't know what happened with me. There was two more girls were walking up and down the street. They didn't know what happened with me. I ran away. So they thought I went home or so, or something like that. So the next day, I came in. And I told Mr. Blanco, I told. He was the one to take us for breakfast, for lunch all the time. So I told, he said, "How come you didn't come to the headquarters after the picketing?" And I told him what happened. So.
Were you supposed to go every day and report what had happened to the headquarters, or?
Sometimes we would report, sometimes I
why was he surprised that you didn't go, to headquarters?
Because most of the time, from the picket line, we used to come to the headquarters. We would sit there a little bit, we would go for coffee, and he was looking forward already to take us to eat, I suppose. So I told him what had happened. And so. So that was one coincidence that I was.
Was there anything that could be done about that?
I was even afraid to tell anybody that I was ashamed to tell anybody that I was dead. But then I heard people were killed, and I had another time I had a policeman. I went down the picket line. And a policeman came up to me, and he put his, a big Irishman, you know, they say Irishmen are big fellas, and they are, some of them are big fellas here. And he was a big, this one was a big handsome fella. He came up and he took my hand and he squeezed my arm, and I almost got black and blue. And as he squeezed, I screamed. And with the other hand, I gave him a slap in his face. It was on the picket line. You know, I gave him a slap in his face because he hurt me awful lot. So he arrested me. When he arrested me, this was the one of the things that he brought me on the next day or the third day in court. And he presented this case to the judge, and then they called on me, and I told them they asked me why I slapped it. And I told the judge he squeezed my arm very bad. So the judge said, "So what did you do to him?" So I said, "So I slapped him in the face." So, oh no, he asked the policeman, "What did she do to you?" And the policeman said, "She slapped me." So the judge said to him, then he asked me again. So the judge asked him, "A little girl like this here," because he was so tall, he was so huge. He said, "A little girl like this here slapped you?" And the whole court started laughing. That a little girl like that slapped the policeman, a big Irishman. This was the funniest thing, really. The whole court started laughing. Otherwise, I never touched anybody. But you say whether I was scared of... yes, I was scared of being hurt, because one man was killed. He was a presser. He was deaf and dumb. And we all went out from the restaurant. he went out first. And he was killed. And we were all scared to death. We were all scared to death.
Was there any way that those people could be caught or brought to court, like the guy that stabbed
him? Well, at that time, they used to bring out skeps from New York. Gangs, all kind of gangs from New York, skeps. They used to call them, they in the book, they have a name, but they Tinkerton, whatever it was. They used to bring skeps in, and they were one of the skeps that just to kill. And in 1910, we had two men were killed. In 1915, one man, that the Cooper, his name was, he was deaf and dumb. He was killed. And I was coming out of the restaurant that time, too. I could have, if I would have been before him, I would have been killed.
Lottie, I'm not quite sure. I don't really understand why you were ashamed that you had been stabbed. Could you explain that?
I don't know. I was ashamed. I was afraid my family shouldn't find out that even now, I'll tell you now, I'll show you the paper, which in the Midwest. Did you see the Midwest newspaper? I'll show you. Even now, when you get in among workers, it's nothing. It's a struggle. It tells you over here that I was arrested 3 times a day. Arrested. Somebody had seen that. He said, "Oh my goodness, you were arrested! Oh, terrible, Lottie, you were arrested!" You see, they don't realize why I was arrested. In a strike, it's common. In a strike, people to be arrested, or in a struggle, or so.
Were you aware that those kinds of things would happen to you before you went out on strike?
No, I didn't think of anything like that.
What were you thinking when you walked out?
Just to better myself and to better my conditions.
Did you speculate at all what it would be like? I've never seen that.
Did you see it? It says I was arrested twice or 3 times a day. Now, I happen to have this here paper in my bag, and one day I was in the JCC, and I couldn't find I needed the gelatin. I had a heart burning, and I needed a gelatin, and I took out I had a big bag, and I took out everything from my big bag, and on the table, and I was looking, searching for my gelatin, and a woman noticed my picture over here, and she said, "Oh, you got a picture in here. What is it?" And she started reading it. "Oh, my God, you were arrested 3 times a day. I'm afraid of you. You're a convict." Could you believe that?
Did you get reactions like that at the time it was happening?
No. But the arrest was to me... at that time, in a struggle, I didn't think of anything. But later, when I was stabbed, that was a revolutionary. You are a revolutionist. You fight, and then they stab you and things like that. That's the way the reaction of some people is. So I was afraid.
So you were afraid because of what you thought other people would think. You
would think that I was stabbed, and I want to tell you that now that I'm proud of in a way I'm proud that I did for the organization. I helped the organization, yeah. But when people take a look like this year and say, She went through the mills already. She was even arrested. It's no credit to me. It depends what kind of people you are with, you see. That time, my aunt, we didn't have no workers in our family that time. My family, they were all business people. From my grandfather and great-grandfather, they were all business people. My father was the only one, a worker. He was a teacher. He was an author. He used to write poetry. Then he became a businessman. Through marriage, he became a businessman. But he never liked this, the business. And I was the first, I could say that I was the first girl getting in the labor movement. I'll tell you something else that you might think that I was crazy. I never seen working people in my life until I came to a factory, until I came in Fall River. I didn't see a factory. I didn't see what kind of people, I couldn't imagine what kind of people work in a factory. So near my aunt's house was an overhaul factory. A Jewish man operated with his children. A big overhaul factory. And one day, I was standing near the door, looking out. I wanted to see what kind of people are coming out from the factory. Isn't that funny? So help me God. I wanted to see what kind of people are coming out from the factory. And I looked at them, I said, they're human beings, I thought to myself. I was that time, when I came, I was 12 years old, 12 and a half years old. I wasn't 13 years old yet. I wanted to see what kind of people coming out from the factory. They said, they're human beings, just like I. It's funny, isn't it? I had never seen working people in my life. In that little town where we lived, they were all business people. They were a grocery with a wife and children, and they worked in the store. There was a butcher, and they were worked all of them, the family. There was a yard goods store, and there was a lumberman. They all worked. The children worked with the father, and we were, I think, the only one that we had a salesman, not a salesman, boys, apprentices, is it, working by us, learning the trade.
Lottie, what happened with this man that stabbed you after that incident? Did you keep seeing him every day as he walked out from Mars?
No, I never saw him anymore.
Did he leave the shop?
I don't know. We never saw him in the union, but I never saw him. He was probably afraid that I'll have him arrested. I never saw him anymore.
Could you have done that?
I don't know. I would maybe point out to the union people, point out that this is the man that stabbed me, and maybe the union would have had him arrested. I don't know. I don't know. And we lost the strike that time. It was Bessie Hillman came and told us to a meeting that we lost the strike. And I had to go and look for another job. I was blackmailed.
From that shop?
I was blackmailed in Chicago. That none of the, because we lost the strike, so the shops were open, and none of them took me in to work. I ran around to look for a job, but they knew my story. Each one knew who I was.
How did they know? Did they circulate a list?
Well, they had association. The factories had association, like with the union. They had association, and they knew who were the active strikers. And then you have to tell them, where did you work? How do you know the work?